News from campus matters to you.
And me.
And me.
And me.
And us.
So, weekdays at 5pm, URN brings you The Pulse. 1 hour of news stories that matter to you.
And me.
And me.
And
I think they get the point. The Pulse. Weekdays from 5.
Because the BBC don't care about the beer prices in Mooch.
Hello, good evening and welcome to The Pulse, the news that matters to you here on University Radio Nottingham. My name is Joe Tanner. I'm joined in the studio tonight by David Saunders, Dan Goldstein and Selena Burfield. It's Friday the 13th of October. The time's just gone 2 minutes past 5 o'clock, and here are the stories that we'll be covering on this evening's show. We'll be examining a recent survey about the best and worst places to live in the UK. We've got news of a traffic collision near University Park, which happened this morning. And thieves also have broken into a football club and thrown cheesecake around. But first, it's over to Daniel, who's got news of a Twitter spat surrounding the recent revelations about sexual harassment and Harvey Weinstein.
Rose McGowan has joined the unfortunately ever-growing list of Hollywood actresses accusing mogul Harvey Weinstein of sexual assault. Twitter's response to that has been dubbed as negligent. McGowan claims that she was paid $100,000 to remain silent after Weinstein made unwanted sexual advances at the 1997 Sundance Film Festival. A number of male Hollywood actors have condemned Weinstein, but a statement made by Ben Affleck, who himself has had to apologise this week for sexual assault, resulted in McGowan launching an explicit-related attack on Twitter. McGowan claimed that she had fully informed Affleck about what had happened at the time, given that he was a co-star on film All the Way, which was also filmed in 1997. In response, Twitter threatened to suspend her account if the tweet wasn't deleted, causing uproar, as Twitter is notorious for its negligence to follow through on its policy to, and I quote, censure targeted abuse. TechCrunch magazine criticised Twitter for failing to lead. The online magazine posted a tweet from blogger Kelly Ellis in which she claimed she had reported a user for rape threats and racial slurs, to which Twitter had algorithmically replied that this was not abuse. Twitter has also failed recently to suspend comedian Owen Benjamin for joking that he wanted to enslave a left-wing reporter on the grounds that he was calling him out for racism in his blog. It begs the question, to what extent are Twitter willing to suspend people based on their opinion if the opinion is offensive, and is it essentially a power thing?
I think in this instance it's kind of quite universal, the fact that a lot of social media institutions now are outlawing people from their sites or suspending them, at least in this case. I believe it's for 12 hours, isn't it?
Yeah.
That the suspension's in place. So I don't think there's anything particular about that which you can relate to this particular Twitter spat. I think that would happen in a manner of different cases. I think it's due to the fact that these people are obviously celebrities, they are high-profile,
which is why
individuals.
I'd say my argument would then be, why would Twitter be more willing to actually follow through on its policy to prevent attack and to suspend those who have launched an attack on someone? Why would they be more willing to do that within entertainment sphere than maybe political? Because let's look at, for example, Trump. Someone who is making offensive comments, arguably supporting white supremacy, coming out in support of nuclear war, I suppose. Why wouldn't they be able to then go and ban Donald, the president of the United States, but they would be willing to suspend someone for simply swearing, which happens on Twitter all the time, I found.
Yeah, that's an interesting point you make there, Dan. I suppose it does, you know, in a ways, from an outsider neutral point of view, you kind of look at those two categories of politics and entertainment and think two different rules surely apply for each of them when it comes to abuse on Twitter and abuse on social media. It's interesting with the entertainment one. Maybe Twitter are quite clearly here setting a precedent for, you know, the World Wide Web and their social media company in particular, whereby abuse like this, no matter what the story, okay, this is a very sensitive issue here, but any abuse kind of like that for or against said argument or for or against said case is not acceptable. But in the realm of politics, I think maybe they're taking it from an approach whereby, you know, obviously issues like sort of fake news, if you like, are quite current, and, you know, the freedom of speech, I think, in politics is such a contentious issue right now that Twitter might not want to react in a certain way, which would be detrimental to their reputation as a company.
Yeah, but
as
in that sense, aren't they then neglecting their responsibility as a worldwide company to protect its users? Because it shouldn't be one rule for one individual and one for another.
But what counts as protecting its users? Given that also the law in different countries will vary, the majority of the arguments to that second one then point out how it's a company based in America, therefore American law applies on the entirety of the site. Don't ask anyone from a country like Iran or China whether that's true, because they will tell you it's not. but you make the point that, you know, they're there to protect their users. Are they there to protect their users? Do they have systems in place to stop spam, to stop fake accounts, to stop the egg accounts, essentially?
Yeah.
I mean, it is National Egg Day today, but I'm not sure. I'm not quite sure it's referring to that. All these accounts that have no followers and just spout abuse. If there's not enough protection to stop that, and because, as Twitter says, it's impossible to stop it, then really its job is a collection of people's speech, well, tweets. So how can we then turn around and say we have to apply some sort of special... we have to treat it differently to someone standing outside the Westboro Baptist Church in the deep south in America and saying, I can't repeat things on air, but... Terrible things.
I agree. It shouldn't be... Go on.
No, I was just saying, especially now, censorship and things like that, I don't think it's just relative to Twitter at all. It's definitely something that's across all types of social media. So Facebook is just as bad in one sense. And I think, as you were saying, different countries and their idea of censorship and that, it varies so broadly. So it's very hard to create a rule as such of where is that line between somebody just having free speech and then something becoming offensive and that having to be removed.
Yeah, I'd say the main issue is that it's very much a disparity. There's a why, and it's not necessarily a thing about power, it's just more why is one powerful person in a particular sphere entitled to speak how they wish, and why is one being silenced when actually people would argue that there's very much a reason for them to launch an explicit attack at someone.
We've covered the aspect of freedom of speech and Twitter quite a lot so far, but just to quickly touch on the issue that's been in the news and in on a lot of debate shows this week, which is this aspect of a crisis of masculinity. The latest actress that has come out and said there's this Harvey Weinstein case represents a much larger issue in Hollywood and in a lot of other acting institutions across the world. Emma Thompson has come out and said it, Angelina Jolie, lots and lots of different
Gwyneth Paltrow
individuals,
as well.
Gwyneth Paltrow as well. So Selena, just to ask you, do you think there is a crisis of masculinity, not just in acting but quite generally in culture in the 21st century?
I think there's definitely an expectation, like, for this idea of what masculinity is, especially in the public eye. I think it's been more and more addressed. It's been raised a lot more recently, especially in the news, like, currently. But, yeah, no, I think there's a bit of a confusion, really, as to the expectation of what even is masculinity anymore. Do you know what I mean? There's definitely a traditional view, and that's just completely being turned and flipped on its head, I suppose you could say. And whether, I don't particularly think that's a bad thing at all, but obviously some people might be against that change, so.
You're listening to The Pulse, URN's award-winning news show, where it's all about the news that matters to you.
But now we're going to move on to a recent car crash which happened today, a traffic collision outside the University Park campus at the University of Nottingham. So road running to the centre of Nottingham was closed today due to a collision between a car and a pedestrian. The incident happened at 8:15 this morning on the 13th of October on University Boulevard near the Lakeside Arts Centre. Trent Barton buses were diverting their services via Woodside Road and the A52 to avoid the scene. The orange 36 and 34 NCT buses were also diverting their services. It's not known if any injuries were sustained by the patient, but police and East Midlands ambulance services were on the scene. A spokeswoman of the Nottinghamshire Police Force said, "We were called at 8:15 to reports of a car in collision with a pedestrian near the Lakeside Arts Centre. East Midlands services attended the scene, and there was a closure from Queen's Road heading towards Beeston." more updates on this story are happening as they come. But just to combine it to some of the other traffic related issues that we've had recently in the week surrounding Nottingham, there was news about the tram failing services around the Forest Recreation Ground area, which has been an area of the tram which has been particularly busy, and the tram actually went off the rails a couple of weeks ago when I was on it on the way to football. But yeah, it's been a couple of issues in terms of transport on that respect.
The transport links here are phenomenal for a city of the size that it is.
Yeah.
Only slightly annoying that when you take the tram to go into the city centre, you have to go round the back end and beyond, past NG2 and Meadows Lane West, rather than going on the route of the buses. Although I imagine the trams on the route of the buses would have been a congestion maker. So to have, yeah, the facilities that we have and the prices that we have as well, that's the main thing, coming from a couple of us from London here on the show.
Yeah.
The main thing is that, you know, £1 with a mango card, other cards are available. Other fruits are available, I suppose. you know, £1.50 on the buses. Yes, it went up from a quid that it was a couple of years ago, which was a nice, pleasant shock when coming back from a year abroad, that no one told me. So to have... yeah, to have what we have, the regularity that it comes at, and the connections to other cities as well. You know, the tram goes basically to East Midlands Airport, as does the hopper bus, I think the 904,
and
Sutton,
the trains
Wellington.
As well.
The trains.
The tram straight to the station, then yeah. I can get home so quick, and I'm a long way away, but...
It is a very well-connected city, and we potentially take it for granted, and that might sound a little weird, again, coming from a city where... if we want funding, we basically get it, because everything's overcrowded anyway. So, yeah, to come from... And I don't know whether you agree, Daniel, that to come from London into a city like Nottingham, I was impressed. I mean, I've been here for 4 years now, so I am no longer impressed, and I was about to question whether Joe and I should actually do a proper rant about Nottingham City Transport in its various guises.
Well, the main aspect for me, David, as all of us have touched on, is the congestion aspect, and I was so surprised when it didn't hit in that top 10 figure of cities in the UK. Of course, London was top, Edinburgh, yeah, well, you have all Manchester, Bristol, all those cities. But
Nottingham
you,
isn't... congested because it has lots of cars on the road. It's very congested because a lot of the roads are very narrow. That
yeah,
road up through
true.
Lenton
yeah.
is one vehicle each side, which yeah. is ridiculous to get between, you know, a university where there are 45,000 people studying. I mean, not all of them are going to descend on the city centre at once, but... Mm.
Do you think, like, just to touch on your point, do you think incidents like this, then, where a passenger or a pedestrian on the side of the road has been hit, a very unfortunate incident, we will bring you any further updates on whether that individual has been heavily injured or not. But nonetheless, do you think that this kind of congestion level... affect students and people on their way into university, specifically at this point in the city, or do you think it's more of a general trend throughout the area of Nottingham?
Well, of course it will affect, you know, transport coming into this part of the city. I don't know just how much of the road was closed off, whether it was just the trams that were closed off. You said it was a collision with a tram and a person, right? Or a bus and a person?
Car. It was a car and an individual, yeah.
Oh, a car and an individual. Yeah. So that would close off a bit more of the road than if it had, say, been just a tram. Luckily, Nottingham, the University of Nottingham, is surrounded on... two, three sides by decent road links.
Yeah. I mean,